podcast,
where your not-so-average museum gals discuss various topics on warfare, all the while drinking and slinging some jokes.
I am your host, Alyssa Atkins.
And I'm your host, Jillian Drapola. This week, we're so excited because we have our first guest with us, and we have to skip the drinking this week, although we'll save it for next week because Alyssa's driving from Virginia Beach. Our guest is, well, I'll let her explain why she's not drinking, and I'm not drinking in solidarity of the two.
Solidarity.
Well, thank you, ladies, so much for having me. I am Rachel Box, and I met Jillian and Alyssa many moons ago. We were all working at the farm together at the museum and became really, really close. We had a really awesome Friday crew, and we worked every single Friday plus many other days together, and have been really close ever since. But like the lady said, I am not drinking. I am 30 weeks pregnant.
Woo-hoo!
So,
yay!
Woo-hoo! Coming on the home stretch.
That's so exciting. I'm just so pumped. Man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You guys are going to be, you're going to be like the best parents ever. Not even joking. I'm so pumped. Baby box. Well, everybody, you're going to be in for a treat, not only because when the three of us get together, we are very goofy. However, our topic this week is on the infamous Night Witches, which Rachel is, I would like to consider, a Night Witch expert. And she is going to be able to talk to us about some of the most amazing and incredible things that these women had faced. So, as I asked Jillian last week, Rachel, if you could give us like a brief book synopsis, like if you had to write a book about the Night Witches, what would be your little synopsis on the back be?
Oh, goodness. Well, I don't know if I would consider myself an expert, but I did write a ton of essays on them when I was in college. I just found them so fascinating. Let's see, my book synopsis, like a tagline elevator pitch would be something like, really awesome women who didn't let adversity stop them. I think that would be it. Kind of hooks you in, gets you interested, and then leaves you wanting to learn more. So
yeah, and then the fact that you add, you know, people are like, well, adversity, where, what time period, what are we talking about? In the past, obviously it's in the past because this is a history podcast, but you added in that it's like they did this in World War II, and then people are like, oh, but women were just nurses, and you're just like, no. This episode is gonna prove you wrong there. So oh my goodness, for those who don't know, Rachel, could you give like a very like kind of Cliff Notes version of who the Night Witches were?
Yes. So the Night Witches were the very first combat women pilots in the world. They were kind of formed in 1941. Marina Raskova was kind of like Russia's equivalent to Amelia Earhart as in terms of fame. So she kind of started this unit. There was three regiments in total, the 586, the 587, and the 588. The 588 was the infamous Night Witches. They were the ones that were the night bombers that ended up earning the nickname Night Witch. And they were anywhere from, they did bombing raids, they did night bombing raids, and then they also did, my gosh, I'm drawing a blank, 30 weeks pregnant, and this is what you get.
I've heard all about it.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, they would run sometimes 12 missions a night, just constantly. They would go and they would drop the bombs, and then they would come back, they would refuel, rearm themselves, and then go back out. 12 times in one night. So that's dedication. And they weren't working with the best materials.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, because I, you know, with my job, I have very little time to do research, although I'm like sitting on my lunch breaks trying to do it. But where did the name Night Witches come from? Because that's a pretty cool name, and it kind of ties in with their equipment, doesn't it?
Yes. So the Night Witches was actually, it was given to them by the Germans. They were called Nachthexen, which in English is a night witch. So the regiment, because they were formed in 1941, you know, the Soviet Union was already in combat with World War II. You know, they were fighting the Axis, all of this stuff. And there were so many people who petitioned and wrote letters, and they were like, well, okay, well, if women are able to join the army, why aren't they able to join the Air Force? Because we've had all these flying clubs because, you know, Amelia Earhart and Charles Lindbergh, there was like a flying craze, and flying clubs popped up out of nowhere across the world. So you've got these, you know, usually younger women, teenage to mid-20s, they all wanted to fly. Like, we know how to do this already. Put us in planes, and we're going to go and make a difference. So the planes that they had, because they weren't really expecting this kind of, like, nationalism, patriotism, like, intent to serve attitude, they gave them, like, the training planes. They were made for crop dusting and farms, and they were literally made out of wood and covered with canvas. Like, one rifle shot would take it down.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Rickety old planes. They're like, okay, well, see what you can do with these. They were called PO2s. And so what they would do is they figured out it fly them as high as you could. They would stall out. And then the sound of the wood and the canvas stalling out and falling through the sky actually sounds like a witch on a broom. And so once they would get close enough, they would drop the bombs and then start the engine back up and take off. So it was kind of like stealth mode, but also sounded very similar to what the Germans would think as a witch on a broom. And that's how they got the name.
That is insane. From my research that I did, the Germans apparently were so scared of these women. Correct me if I'm wrong. They were so scared of these women.
They were
that
terrified.
If they shot any of them down, they got this really prestigious Iron Cross medal.
Yeah.
Like, that is insane. They're just like,
that's how
okay.
That's how, like, okay, can I say, like, badass?
It makes, and like, I don't know how to explain this, like, completely, but the fact that unless you're at the college level and you don't hear anything about this, and even still, like, this is not talked about when you talk about women in combat, right? Like, you know, you don't, nobody talks about the Night Witches. So if they do, they're like, oh, the Night Witches, and, you know, they might have dropped bombs and that's it, but not these basically justifying the act that they're doing. And, you know, not only, I mean, being a pilot, regardless, especially in the Second World War, is very justifying. However, the fact that they are going out on the wing and trying to get the bomb to drop, or that they are stalling the engine and coming in, and the fact that the Germans, let's be real, the fact that the Germans were like, oh my God, it's not match, oh my God, like, it's like, and like the German words have escaped me. Oh, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, yes, that would be literally what they'd be saying and freaking out about. They were called Nachthexen, Rachel, correct? Like the German pronunciation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh my God. That is, I'm curious to know what exactly did the training, like what was their specific training for this that they had to go through?
So they ended up, the training that it usually took for, bomber pilots, it usually lasted roughly 2 years. These women went through their training in 1 year.
Okay.
And they had everyone from pilots to armors, who were the ones who would attach the bombs to each plane. They had people who were like mapping things out. Like it wasn't just the pilots who were a part of the regiments. There was about thousands of women applied, but there was only about 400 women per regiment, including crew, pilots, mechanics, armors, things like that. So it was pretty selective for the amount of people who actually applied.
My question, and in my head, like, this sounds very similar for those people who are more familiar with, like, the American WASP program. But the WASP program started 2 years after the Night Witches started. They started in August of 43, but it sounds very similar to, like, their training, how they went through it. And they had hand-me-down, too, like, right? Like, uniforms and everything?
Yeah. Yeah, so they had hand-me-down clothes, shoes. Some women had to, like, actually tear up their bedding so that they could stuff their shoes so that their shoes would fit. Hand-me-down planes. These were, like, their training planes that the men use. Like, oh, we'll just give those to the women. See what they can do with it.
And okay. Here, and here they are in, like, the middle of the night, like, stalling out their planes so that they could, like, stealth bomb the Germans.
Yeah. I mean, and that wasn't – so that was like, one technique that they did. But that one is, like, honestly one of the most impressive things because, like, if you can stall out a training plane made of wood and covered in canvas and continue to hit your target and then keep going – like, that's awesome. But what they also would do is they would fly in, like, groups. When they got to their target, they would all kind of veer off in different directions and kind of, like, scare the bejesus out of the Germans. Like, oh, my gosh, I don't know which way they're going. Like, searchlights are, like, going in every single direction trying to figure out where they went, what they were doing. And then they would, like... the pilot of the third plane would fly, like, directly towards the target and then, kill the engine, drop it, take off again. So, like,
wow.
They had quite a bit of strategy, which is really cool.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing. And when you said scatter, like, I was like, it took me back to our Great Emu War, where the emu's like, scatter! Scatter! Like, what? Oh my gosh, that is... Yeah. Yep. Scatter! Johnny Karate.
One of the things I think I'm most interested in is the fact of, like, you know, really going through that training, because even today, like today's theater, it's any type of pilot, it's a very rigorous training, and you have to have like a certain, you have to be physically fit, like truly, truly physically fit, because things can go wrong with the plane. It's very bizarre. But did they have to endure a lot of physical standards, or the same standards, I guess, as men during their training? Because I mean, it's Soviet Union, and so I would imagine that the standards would be the same, or at least expected. But do you know if those standards were the same for the Night Witches as they would be for male pilots, or did they drop the standards basically?
So I know that, I don't know specifics on the training, but I do know that a lot of the women who were joining, they were younger. They were from, you know, anywhere from 18 to, you know, in their mid 20s. And, I mean, Soviet Union, during World War II, everyone is, you're not really going to find a whole lot of people who are overweight. You have a lot of people who are hardworking, who want to be able to, you know, they're comrades, they're putting forth an effort to, you know, contribute to society. So like the pilots themselves were pretty much already physically fit, physically active. The really interesting thing is like the armorers, they really had to be strong, sturdy women. Like, I would probably be in armor because I'm 6 feet tall and, you know, not the skinniest, but I can lift some pretty heavy things. They would have to attach 4 bombs to the aircraft by hand all night long. That meant like 800 pounds. They did it all night. You know, like one plane would take off and then the next one would land. So I actually have this book that is a whole bunch of oral histories of women during World War II who served in the Soviet Union. And they said that the body like completely reorganized itself so much during the war that they almost felt that they weren't women. Their period stopped after the war. Not everyone could have children because of the effects. They all smoked. And because of the clothes that they were wearing, the trousers, the army shirts, it made you feel masculine, made you look masculine. Like your gait, the way that you walked, changed. So not necessarily physical demands of training, but the way that the war changed their bodies physically would be something that would stay with them forever.
I'm curious to think, like, do you think there was pressure on them to kind of mold into, or I don't want to say mold, but like kind of fit in with the men? Whereas, you know, the Americans were like, you know, they still kept everything very feminine for the women. But, you know, like in Russia, they're like, no, it's all going to be this. Everybody is very uniform. And I'm wondering, like, if they mentally, like with obviously with the uniforms, like you're going to hold yourself a little bit differently because you have to, because like it doesn't fit you properly. But I wonder if mentally they were like, well, let me just change the way I walk a little bit, or, you know, if it was like a more natural progression over time, just because they're seeing that all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that that is the case. You know, it just kind of like naturally happens over time. And in that same book, you know, it doesn't just talk about, you know, they don't just interview pilots, they interview nurses and you know, people who are snipers and all the way up through the ranks. But they, there was a couple folks in that same book who, because they turned so masculine during the war, they like, after the war ended, they didn't wear trousers ever again. They would wear dresses and they would do their hair because they were like, that was a point in their life where they just like completely lost all sense of who they were. You know, growing up, they had, you know, they were girls basically. And, you know, they were wearing dresses and skirts and, you know, being very feminine, being young ladies. And then all of a sudden the war hit and it was like, we all have to be the same.
Right.
And then after the war, they're like, never again do I want to do that. I never want to feel like I'm losing myself again.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, man. I can imagine. I wonder, too, do you know of any incidences of, like, the men sabotaging them? Because, I mean, the Night Witches were pretty big, but were any, like, male pilots ever, I don't want to say, like, kind of jealous, but do you think they ever sabotaged the women? Or do you think because like Russia was so very like, we're all in for like one cause, like you guys are awesome, just keep doing what you're doing, you're helping us out. Because like with the Wasp, you know, like to just run a similarity for some people, you know, the Wasp were sabotaged, where the men were mad because they could fly the Mustangs before, you know, their engines were catching on fire or something. And the officers are like, well, if they can do it, why can't you do it? But you know, men can't be shown up. But in Russia, I don't know if that was like the case, or do you have any like any instances of that?
So I know that there was discrimination for sure, like 100%. You know, the men viewed them as kind of inferior. They didn't show them a whole lot of respect, but they didn't. I haven't found any accounts of them actually like going out of their way to sabotage. But like they weren't given similar equipment. like, they didn't have radios or machine guns to protect themselves. Like, you're basically just like, okay, well, you'll figure it out, kind of deal. But I haven't found any accounts yet. These regiments were all women regiments. So they were all kind of like on base together, but they definitely didn't have anything nearly as basic.
Yeah, I feel like with them being together, like so often and having, you know, female officers, like it was a full on, you know, like you said, it was a full on female like regiment without, you know, how like the Americans would have like male, you know, commanders, or, you know, obviously they might have like male instructors during training. But then after that, it was like, we are a solid female regiment. I think that's pretty cool how they're all like, well, we're just going to stick together. And anyone who, you know, has ideas, speak up, please.
Right. That's yeah. Cool. And I mean, actually, the discrimination kind of like strengthened their resolve to be better. And so once they like actually made a name for themselves and were showing the numbers that they were, you know, putting up, the men actually started to respect them more. So,
yeah,
it was, I can't imagine what it would have been like being in that regiment.
I mean,
not even a pilot, but just being like a navigator or an armorer and seeing.
I personally feel though, I mean, that's all across the board during the Second World War, to be quite honest.
Right.
You know, women really had to prove themselves, like, oh, well, you can come on in, but you can be a nurse. You can be part of the nurses' corps. And women all across the board, you know, through truly just the Allied powers, were like, no, we want more. We can do this. We are absolutely able to. And actually, in the next coming weeks, we are going to be doing an episode on Joan Clark. And so Joan Clark, who was a part of the infamous gang who helped decode the Enigma machine, right, the German Enigma machine with Alan Turing, she faced so much discrimination with all of the men. And she was a mathematician, and she was brilliant. And that's not even part of the military in general, but women wanted more during the Second World War. They wanted to be away from just being secretaries, you know, being part of this, being attached to somebody else. Women really, I believe, proved themselves during the Second World War. Some of them were brilliant cryptographers beyond all belief who sat in, you know, decrepit buildings in Paris, decoding so many different things. Really just making a name for themselves. And the Night Witches, I think, are a very poignant example of showcasing the strength and resolve of women in the military. You know, it's granted Russia had its collectivism, you know, where, you know, we're all in this together. However, they, as you stated, Rachel, they lost their identities. Whereas the women, I believe, throughout, you know, the United States and even England, they still had that femininity because, well, you can wear a skirt. you can wear heels if you want to. You can still wear lipstick if you want to. But the Night Witches, as you said, just simply could not. You know, they felt they had to be more masculine because of the clothing that they were in and all of these things. And I think it's just so interesting how that comes about. But really, if we're going to be honest, women run the world. We do.
Yeah.
We for sure run the world.
And if not, we will just stealth bomb you at night.
Yeah. Stealth bomb you. We'll send the Karen army out after that.
The Karen army, Night Witches. You won't hear them coming. Or maybe you will, but it'll be too late. You know, who knows? Okay, I'm curious with the Night Witches. Do you know how many missions they flew, like, in total?
Yes. So they flew, let me get back to it in my notes, from June of 1942. So remember, they started in 1941. They got the okay from Stalin to create this regiment or these regiments. They had 1 year of training. So 1942 to October of 1945, they flew approximately, get this, 23,670 combat sorties. They collectively logged 28,675 flight hours and dropped over 3,000 tons of bombs and 26,000 incendiary shells. Like, imagine how the war would have ended if these women had not played their part. They damaged and destroyed 17 river crossings, 9 railways, 12 fuel depots, 26 warehouses, 2 railway stations, and they made, so they weren't just bombing things. They also made 155 supply drops of food and ammunition to Soviet forces.
And this was all in the Eastern Front, correct? Like, they didn't necessarily extend into Germany specifically. This was all what, like, modern day Poland and like Ukraine and that, right?
Mostly. Yes, okay. That's where the majority of it took place.
Mm. Okay. And, like, first of all, that is amazing. Like, their stats.
Yeah.
But also, I can't, like, imagine the number. Like, how many did they lose?
They lost quite a bit in a sense of, like, they lost some higher-ranking officials. They only really... This part gets me. They only lost 32.
out of, like, how many?
Like, roughly, I mean, well, 32 pilots. There was 400 in each regiment, but that made up crew, mechanics,
right,
that kind of thing. They had some women that, like, they would fly their plane. Because, like you said earlier, Jillian, like, the Germans were so terrified of them that they would, like, get awarded medals. So they knew that the Germans were going to be rewarded if they got downed, so they would literally fly their planes until they couldn't anymore. They would come in, one of them, like, the whole bottom part of the plane was on fire, and they made it back to base.
Oh my god, I shouldn't, like, laugh at that, but at the same time, I'm laughing, like, in disbelief, because
I know, it's almost unbelievable.
They were taunting the Germans.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
taunting them. Oh my God.
Not give them the satisfaction of winning a medal for shooting them down.
Those Germans got awarded for shooting down these night witches, but I feel like these women have a better thing coming to them post-war. Isn't that right, Rachel?
Absolutely.
And I think this is actually a good stopping point for us, because we will talk a little bit more about that in depth and how awarded after, because I want to do a little bit more research on the mother of the movement, too. Because she has a pretty cool backstory and kind of a sad ending, but I mean, it's pretty prestigious in the end. So thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us this week. And we will talk to you more next week. We're very excited about it.
Thank you so much for having me. This honestly has been, like, the highlight of my week. So thank you.
Oh, good. Good. That's what we like to hear. We'll talk to you next week, and we will hear from everybody soon. So don't forget to drop us a like on our Facebook page, our Instagram page, and give us a shout out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And drop us a line if you have any questions about anything that we talk about in this episode or anything that you want to hear.